Hey there, folks. Welcome to the first edition of the Weekly Dispatch audio version. This is going to be the third dispatch in our ongoing series, and I've got some very special stuff coming up for you today. Our main topic is going to be biochar, cover crops, and regenerative soil to save the world. I'm really stoked to be doing this for you guys. I'm really stoked that you're here listening. And please feel free when we're done to drop a comment in the post. Let me know what you think. Send me an email. I read and we'll get back to everything. I want to take suggestions. I want to take feedback. And I want to take your questions and hopefully be able to answer them in future dispatches. So let's get into it, all right? So up here on the mountain, spring is just exploding into summer overnight. We've got a tiny window between the last frost and the first heat waves, and we're right in the thick of it right now. That means full throttle homestead mode. Garden beds going in, fruit trees getting fed, infrastructure projects kicking off left and right. And in the middle of all this, I've been deep in a regenerative soil biology course with Matt Powers, and I'm absolutely fired up about the power of living soil. I am just absolutely losing my mind, geeking out. I can't stop talking about it. And honestly, half of what this is so that I don't absolutely annoy my poor lady to death with talking about this all the time. So this is an outlet for me to talk about what I'm passionate about. Thanks for listening. So in the middle of all this, we're going in on soil this week. We're going all in. It's the only thing that's on my brain. I'm completely zoned in, dialed in on this, and I'm really excited to share what I've been learning with you guys and my process as I integrate this understanding into my systems that I'm creating up here. Whether you're brand new to regenerative soil systems or you're already down the rabbit hole of microscopy and microbial theory, this dispatch is going to be packed with tactical insight and eye-opening science to help you grow better food, fix broken land, and reclaim power from the ground up. So let's dig right in. First up's our food for thought for the week. Biology over chemistry. Why living soil is the real fertilizer. Most people think of soil as quote unquote dirt, a dead medium that you dump fertilizer into so that plants can grow. But real soil, the kind that produces nutrient-dense food, resists pests and drought, and safeguards your health, isn't dirt. It's alive. And understanding what's happening under your feet is the key to food sovereignty, climate stability, and personal health. So let's get one thing straight first. This isn't about biology being good and chemistry being bad. Biology is chemistry. It's just the kind that cycles, adapts, and regenerates. But when we continuously dump synthetic fertilizers into soil without feeding its biology, we trade short-term growth for long-term collapse. We kill the microbial life that builds structure, unlocks nutrients, and buffers the system against extremes. What's left behind is dust, not soil. So soil pH is the nutrient gatekeeper. Soil pH measures how acidic or alkaline your soil is. Most crops and soil microbes thrive in the slightly acidic to neutral range, about 6.2 to 6.8. But pH doesn't just affect plant growth. It determines which nutrients are locked up and which are actually bioavailable. Out of range, pH can chemically bind up nutrients like phosphorus, calcium, magnesium, and iron, leaving your plants starving to death, even in quote-unquote fertile soil. Think of pH as the lock and the nutrients as the treasure. If the lock's rusted shut, the treasure's worthless because the plants can't get to it. So now we're going to redox. EH, the soil's energy flow. EH is oxidation reduction potential. It's the soil's electrical environment. It tells you whether your soil favors aerobic, life-giving processes or anaerobic, decay-driven ones. Over-oxidized soils stress microbes. Anaerobic soils breed pathogens. A balanced EH paired with a healthy pH creates the zone where the soil food web explodes with life. You don't need a lab to fix EH. Just reduce compaction, avoid harsh chemicals, and keep organic matter cycling. Super important. Build a habitat. Build an ecosystem. And let life do its thing. CEC. is cation exchange capacity, and it's how well your soil holds fertility. It measures your soil's ability to hold on to essential nutrients like calcium, potassium, magnesium, and ammonium. Low cation exchange capacity soils like sand leak nutrients fast. High CEC soils, like those rich in clay or organic matter, act like a battery, storing nutrients and releasing them steadily as the plants need them. Want better CEC? Compost. Mulch. Cover crop. Get that organic matter into the soil. Feed the system and it'll feed you back. The microbial engine. How life builds soil. Soil's not just particles. It's a living matrix of biology, minerals, and organic compounds. Microbes are the architects. Bacteria form microaggregates. Fungi weave macroaggregates with hyphae. Their glues, acids, and enzymes stabilize soil structure and cycle nutrients. In healthy soils, microbes naturally buffer the pH, chelate nutrients, and lock up toxins. They are the real chemists, and they work for free if you give them the right conditions. Every time you till, over-fertilize, or spray chemicals, you destroy these biological networks. You sever the communication between plants and the organisms that feed them. But when you rebuild that life, when you compost, when you mulch, when you inoculate, or steward, you restore the intelligence of that system. Toxic metals, locked nutrients, and why pH equals health. Here's the hard truth. Acidic soils, overly acidic soils, unlock toxic heavy metals. Aluminum, lead, cadmium, and mercury become soluble when pH drops too low, meaning they can be absorbed by your crops and end up in your food. That's bad. A stable, living soil keeps these metals locked up, inert, and out of your body. And in kind, if your soil is too alkaline, all of the good minerals and nutrients that your plants need will be bound up as well. So you really want to keep it right there in that middle, slightly acidic, but really as close to a balanced pH of 7 as you possibly can. So if you care about clean food and clean blood, you have to care about your soil, where your food comes from, how it's grown. A balanced pH, high organic matter, and rich microbial life aren't just good gardening. They're personal protection. The climate crisis is a soil crisis. Everybody's worried about CO2. Start with the ground. Here's why. Dead soils don't cycle carbon. They're broken off from the carbon cycle. Living soils do cycle carbon through photosynthesis. Plants pull CO2 from the atmosphere. That carbon is pushed into the soil through roots as sugars, feeding microbes, building humus, and locking carbon underground where it belongs. Over 70% of global agricultural soils are degraded. That's not just a farming problem. That's the root of desertification, food insecurity, and climate instability. But the solution's in your hands. You can literally reverse climate damage by regenerating the soil beneath your feet. So here's the bottom line. Soil is the foundation of health, freedom, and survival for everything on Earth. And every civilization has risen or fallen based on how they treated their soil. Right now we're at a tipping point. And the way forward isn't more synthetic input. It's biology. It's stewardship. It's regeneration. Whether you've got 40 acres or a balcony container, you can make a real difference. Get your hands in the soil. Feed the microbes. Build living systems. Learn how this stuff works. And in doing so, reclaim the future, one handful of earth at a time. Let's get into our plant of the week now. So the plant of the week this week is alfalfa, Medicago sativa, the soil builder's best friend. Alfalfa isn't just animal fodder. It's one of the most powerful regenerative plants you can grow. This deep-rooted perennial legume is a living tool set for soil health with benefits that reach far beyond its humble reputation. It's a nitrogen fixer. So alfalfa forms symbiotic relationships with rhizobia bacteria to pull nitrogen straight from the atmosphere into the soil, feeding future crops. It's also a dynamic accumulator. Its insanely deep taproot mines minerals like calcium, magnesium, sulfur, and iron from subsoil layers, bringing them to the surface and making them bioavailable for the other plants. It's a microbial stimulation. Alfalfa exudes root sugars that feed beneficial bacteria and fungi, activating and diversifying your soil food web. It's also a living mulch and adds biomass. It produces generous biomass for chop and drop mulch or compost. It's high in nitrogen and mineral rich. Cut it before it flowers for maximum regrowth. It also has multi-use functionality. You can use it as rabbit and chicken fodder. Alfalfa is a nutrient-dense, protein-rich forage that supports healthy growth in rabbits and poultry. Chickens love it, fresh or dried, so do ducks, and rabbits thrive on it in moderation. Matter of fact, from my experience with doing meat rabbits, most of the feed that you're going to buy your rabbits is like super high in alfalfa. It's one of the main ingredients that's in there. So if you can start growing that for yourself, healing your soil with it, and then chop and drop it to feed to your rabbits, you're going to be in good shape. It's also a bee magnet and a pollinator magnet. The blooms attract pollinators and beneficial insects, strengthening your garden's total ecological web. It also helps to control erosion. It has super dense roots and foliage that stabilize soil, prevent washouts, and help to hold moisture in the soil. So here's a little pro tip. Plant alfalfa along the edges of your garden, in orchard understories, or in rotational cover crop systems. It plays really well with comfrey, clover, and fruit trees. Just keep it cut back if you don't want it going woody or spreading by seed. If you want one plant that heals soil, feeds animals, attracts pollinators, and boosts your system's resilience from root to canopy, alfalfa is the one for you. So now let's get into our tactic for tough times or good ones. Our tactic this week is building living soil. Surprise! But I'm going to give you 8 tactical tools for a regenerative foundation. Practical tools you can use right now. And if you can't right now, learn about them. Jot them down. Make, you know, a note for the future. And as soon as you have an opportunity, this stuff is going to do so much for you if you start getting into this stuff. So if you want to grow more than just food, if you want to grow resilience, abundance, and health, you've got to start with the soil. Living biologically active soil is the foundation of everything. Yield, nutrient density, climate stability, and long-term fertility. Here are 8 of the most powerful tools and practices to build it. Number 1, plant guilds. Nature's team-based design. A plant guild is a community of mutually beneficial plants that mimic natural ecosystems. Instead of monoculture rows, guilds are structured like forests, layered, diverse, and self-supporting. They're going to boost soil health through dynamic root systems and constant exudates. They're going to attract beneficial insects and pollinators. They're going to suppress weeds and reduce pest pressure. They're also going to support nitrogen cycling across multiple levels. A couple examples would be a tomato guild. So you're going to have your tomatoes. You're going to add basil as a pest deterrent, marigolds as a nematode suppression, carrots as root zone biodiversity, and nasturtium as a trap crop for pests. Another example would be of a fruit tree guild would be an apple tree. You're going to add comfrey as a nutrient accumulator. You're going to add clover as a nitrogen fixer, yarrow as a pollinator magnet, and daikon radish to break up compact soils. So guilds are going to make your entire system more productive, self-regulating, and biologically rich. They mimic natural systems. Nature doesn't monocrop for a reason. Number 2, cover cropping. Healing soil in the off-season. Cover cropping involves growing non-harvested plants between seasons to protect and enrich the soil. It's going to add biomass and organic matter. It's going to fix nitrogen if you use things like clover, vetch, and peas. It's going to break up compaction, like plants like radish, turnip. It's going to prevent erosion and nutrient leaching. It's going to support soil microbes and mycorrhizal fungi. And it's going to keep living roots in the soil all year round, over winter, and it's going to feed your microbes during the colder months where they kind of go to sleep and they go dormant. They have less activity going on. So you're going to use this method by sowing after you harvest or in off seasons where you're not growing anything, just to keep something living in the soil, because the microbes can't live without living roots in the soil. They're going to die off. Your fungi is not going to be there. Life needs life. You're going to water it lightly. You're going to let it grow. You're going to terminate it by mowing, crimping, or cutting it before it goes to seed. Or you can run your rabbits in a tractor over it, or your chickens, you know, to prep your beds. There's so many ways you can terminate them. You can even use like a propane torch and just give it a quick once over, and that's going to literally make all of the cell walls in the plant explode and they die. And then you just leave them there. You don't pull them out. You leave the roots in the ground, and that's going to add more biological material that's going to continue to break down and add that organic matter to your soil. So cover crops are a regenerative loop. They feed the soil, protect it, and build it without needing anything in return. Number three is biochar, carbon that works for you. Biochar is charred organic matter created through a process called pyrolysis, which is a low oxygen burn. It's used to improve soil structure and biology. It acts like a little bomb shelter for microorganisms, right? Like this little piece, this little chunk of biochar that's maybe the size of your pinky nail, right? It's like the size of a freaking continent for these microbes. And it's full, if you look at it under a microscope, it's full of all these tunnels and, you know, all of the passageways that the water passes through the plant or the stick or whatever woody material that you're burning. It's like this insane cave system for these microorganisms to live inside of. So it's just absolutely amazing. It can hold like multiple times its own weight in water. So it helps to retain water in your soil. And I'm getting off script now, so I'm gonna link back into it and try and not go off on too many more tangents so that we can have this be as cohesive as possible. We'll save the tangents for the podcast. So biochar, it's going to add long-lasting carbon to your soil, and it can last and continue to benefit your soil for over 1,000 years. That's crazy, right? It's going to boost nutrient retention, your cation exchange capacity. It's going to enhance water holding capacity. It's going to house beneficial microbes, and it's going to reduce nutrient leaching. So here's how you can make it. You're going to burn woody biomass in a low oxygen setup, like a TLUD stove, a pit, or a barrel. And, you know, go watch a YouTube video. I can't get into explaining it for you guys right here today. I'm going off on a tangent again. You can make stuff to burn it yourself. You can, you know, drop a little bit of money. It's actually, you know, you can get biochar kilns that are actually very expensive. But if you want to get started cheaply, quickly, you can use just like a metal drum to start making your biochar. It's really easy. Then you're going to cool it fully. And then after that, after it's cool, you're going to inoculate it with compost tea, your own urine, or worm castings. Then you're going to apply that soaked biochar into your beds, your compost piles, or under your mulch layer. Just mix it into your mulch in your garden beds, right into them. So biochar is carbon negative. It pulls carbon from the air, locks it in the soil, and gives you better yields in the process. Number four, compost and compost teas. Feed the soil, not the plant. Compost is decomposed organic matter full of microbes. You probably know this. Teas and extracts are liquid forms of compost used to spread microbial life fast. And that's going to improve your soil structure with humus, humic acid. It's going to introduce life into dead or sterile soils. It's going to feed plants with slow-release bioavailable nutrients, and it can be brewed to target bacterial or fungal dominance. You're going to add finished compost to beds, holes, or as mulch. You're going to brew aerated teas with compost and molasses for 24 hours. You're going to apply it to soil or foliage to inoculate directly. Compost is literally the heartbeat of the soil. It recharges the system with life. 5. Mulching. Mimic the forest floor. Mulch is any layer of organic matter laid over soil to protect it. That can be straw, wood chips, leaves, compost, shredded plants, even paper scraps and cardboard. That's going to help you retain moisture. It's going to prevent erosion. It's going to suppress weeds. It's going to feed microbes as it breaks down. It's going to regulate the soil temperature and act as a shield for the fungi and the worms from the sun and desiccation. You're going to want to layer at least 2 to 4 inches deep with your mulch with diverse materials. Reapply as needed throughout the season. Bare soil is unnatural. If you walk through the woods, very rarely, unless like animals have recently passed through or someone's screwing with it, very rarely you're going to see soil that doesn't have a natural mulch layer on it. It keeps the soil alive and moist and protected, just like nature does in a forest. That's how you want your gardens and your systems to be. 6, fungal inoculation. Power up the network. Introducing mycorrhizal fungi and other beneficial spores to plant roots and soil to spark biological relationships. That's going to increase phosphorus and trace mineral access. It's going to build soil aggregates via glomalin, link plants into fungal communication networks and improve drought resilience. It's actually crazy. I'm going to go off on another tangent, guys. I'm sorry, I can't help it. So when you add mycorrhizal fungi to a sprouting seed, when the first roots are starting to come out, right? Because then it's like a baby human kind of imprints on its environment and it starts to figure stuff out right away, right? The sooner that you can introduce those fungi, those mycorrhizal fungi to your plant roots, the more your plant is going to be able to adapt with them and grow with them as a beneficial relationship. And these mycorrhizal fungi, right, their hyphae attaches onto the plant roots and literally can increase the surface area of your plant roots by 10,000 times. It literally acts as like extensions. Like if you had extensions on your arms and you could reach further to grab stuff, they communicate with each other. The fungi reads what the plant needs. It goes out farther than the plant can reach to bring it back for the plant. And it lives off of the exudates from the plant roots. So it's this absolutely just amazing symbiotic relationship that you're introducing into your garden. And it's what's happening naturally all around us. You want that. So you're going to dust your mycorrhizal spores onto the roots during a transplant, or like I said, when the seed is sprouting. You want to do it as early as possible. You're going to add fungal compost to perennial beds, and you're going to brew fungal-dominant compost teas. Fungi are the long-distance nutrient traders and communication network of the soil. Without them, the plants are isolated. 7, no-till or low-till practices protect the architecture. Minimizing soil disturbance to preserve structure, biology, and moisture. That's going to preserve fungal hyphae and worm tunnels, the drillosphere. It's going to reduce compaction, it's going to maintain moisture, and it's going to prevent oxidation of soil carbon. You're going to aerate lightly with a broad fork, you know, just poke little holes. You don't need to do that, because your worms in an ideal world will do that for you. But if you really want to give, you know, some more aeration to your soil without completely overturning it and disrupting everything, you can take a pitchfork and, you know, give it some little punctures, right? You're going to layer compost and mulch on top of your old beds. You're going to use hand tools, livestock, or cover crops instead of tillage. And that's going to keep everything alive. Tillage kills soil biology. If you want long-term fertility, stop flipping the system upside down. 8, livestock integration, even small scale. Incorporating animals chickens, ducks, rabbits, goats, sheep, cattle into your system to close the nutrient loop. Even worms count as livestock. I'm just going to throw that in there. Because not everybody can have a cow. But we can all have worms. So that's going to fertilize with nutrient-rich manure. They're going to prune and trample plants. They're going to aerate and prep the beds, especially chickens, because they're, you know, always digging around, turning stuff over. And they're going to turn waste into fertility. Let your chickens clean up spent beds. Use rabbit droppings as cold manure. Rotate ducks or goats through orchard alleys. There are a million different ways that you can incorporate animals into your system and just have a massive benefit that you, unless you went in and did the work of the animal, you're not going to get the same effect. And who wants to do all that work? Let the animals do it for you. Automation, right? So animals complete the cycle. Even one rabbit or a few hens can take your soil fertility to the next level. Final word here. Soil is the system. If you want better yields, more nutrient-dense food, long-term freedom, and climate resilience, don't just grow plants, grow soil. These practices aren't chores. They're how you rebuild the foundation of health, sovereignty, and abundance from the ground up. Create the conditions, let the biology do the work, and watch your land come back to life. So now let's get into our tool skill highlight of the week. This week, we're going to learn how to grow indigenous microorganisms, IMOs, using the Korean natural farming rice method. This is really cool, guys. You might have heard about it before, but this is relatively new to me, so I'm just stoked about it. If compost is the heartbeat of the soil, right, indigenous microorganisms, or IMOs, are its immune system. These native fungi, bacteria, and actinomycetes, right, have evolved alongside your environment to break down organic matter, build soil structure, outcompete pathogens, and unlock nutrients, all while boosting resilience to drought, pests, and disease. Amazing, right? IMOs make your soil smarter, stronger, and more self-reliant. Now, where can you find the best ones? Where can you find these IMOs? For the most potent and diverse IMO culture, collect from an old growth forest or an undisturbed woodland near your site. These systems hold the most ancient, stable microbial webs, especially the fungal networks, crucial to mature, regenerative soil. You're going to look for mixed hardwood or conifer tree forests with rich, undisturbed soil, rotting logs, leaf mold, white mycelial strands, and spongy earth. Moist, shady microclimates under thick leaf litter. Seed your trap with intention. Before placing your rice trap, you can jumpstart colonization by adding a chunk of rotting log or visible mycelium, leaves with white fuzz or fungal colonies, a sprinkle of fungal-rich forest soil. Just like dropping a sourdough starter into fresh dough, this anchors the culture in beneficial fungi and reduces the chance of contamination. You're going to want to add this in both before you cook the rice. So you're going to cook some of this in with your rice. And then you're going to add more after the rice is cooked before you go put it out in the woods in your spot where you got it from. So why does this work? How does this work? So it's going to increase microbial diversity and more resilience. It's going to speed up colonization and reduces the failure rate because it gives your IMOs kind of a leg up on the competition once you put them in there yourself, you know. It's going to outcompete airborne molds and pathogens. It's going to introduce a full micro ecosystem, including bacteria, archaea, enzymes, decomposers, and humic compounds. It's going to accelerate fungal dominance, which is key for perennial systems and humus formation. So how to make IMO 1 using the rice method. This is step one in Korean natural farming's microbial cultivation process. You're going to need cooked white rice. You don't want it soggy. The grains should stay relatively separate and, you know, be nice and crumbly like your perfect rice. You don't want a glob of rice. You're going to need a small wooden or breathable container. You're going to need a cloth or a paper towel cover and a string or a rubber band to hold the cloth on. So step one, you're going to let the rice cool to room temperature and fill the container halfway. You're going to cover it loosely to allow airflow and then place it in your forest site just beneath the leaf litter. Keep it shaded and moist and wait four days to a week, 4 to 7 days. You should see at the end of that time period some white fuzz, webbing, and spores inside your rice. This is your IMO1. A little color variation is okay, but if you see black mold, start over. It's anaerobic. You don't want it. So what you're going to do with it, what you can do with it right away, is you can add it to your compost piles to supercharge the decomposition. You're going to mix with water and use it as a soil drench. You're going to blend it with biochar to create a living inoculant. You're going to apply under mulch in your garden beds. You're going to stabilize it into IMO2 by mixing it with brown sugar. So that's scaling it up a little bit, and that's a little bit more advanced, stabilizing it into IMO2. So what you're going to do there, which you don't need to go this far, you know, you don't need to do any of this, but it's going to be massively beneficial the deeper that you can get into this, the more stable it's going to be. So you're going to make IMO2, you're going to mix your IMO1 with equal parts brown sugar. You're going to let it ferment for a few days. To make IMO3, you're going to add IMO2 to rice bran and soil. You're going to keep that moist and aerobic. And then if you want to go a step further into IMO4, you're going to combine your IMO3 with your native field soil to condition for full system use. Each step increases microbial diversity, field readiness, and long-term viability. And now, why in the world is this worth it? Why would you go spend all this time to go do this? So you're not just adding microbes. You're reviving your land with hyper-local biological intelligence that already knows how to thrive there. This is soil sovereignty in action. Low cost, high impact, and 100% regenerative. If you want to break the dependency cycle on synthetic inputs and build a system that gets stronger every season, this is your starting point. So now let's get into the recipe of the week. And this week's recipe, you are not going to want to eat unless there's something really, really wrong with you. This week, we're going to be learning how to make a compost activator brew, a microbe tea for the people. If your compost pile's just sitting there like a lump, this will wake it up like a boot to the ribs. This simple, biology-rich brew floods your pile or your garden beds with beneficial microbes, jump-starting decomposition and bringing dead dirt back to life. You don't need a microscope or a lab coat, just a bucket, a bubbler, and the will to build something better. You need some ingredients. You're going to need 5 gallons of dechlorinated water, rainwater, well water, or let tap water sit out for 24 hours. I would definitely recommend if you're going to use tap water that's chlorinated, you use a little air pump to get the oxygen flowing. It'll help to gas off all of the stuff that you don't want in there that's going to kill your microbes, because that's what chlorine does, right? So you're going to take 1 or 2 cups of finished compost or worm castings, 1 tablespoon of unsulfured molasses to feed the microbes, and optionally you can add a handful of leaf mold or IMO material for fungal diversity. And I definitely recommend you do this if you have the ability to. Another optional thing you can do is add 1 teaspoon of kelp powder, liquid seaweed, or some rock dust to add some trace minerals into there, and your plants will love you. So the equipment that you'll need to do this is a 5-gallon bucket or similar container, aquarium bubbler or an airstone, cheesecloth or a mesh bag to contain your solids, which, you know, you don't need to do, but I definitely recommend you do that. You're going to brew it. This is how you're going to brew it. So you're going to add your compost, your castings to the bucket in your mesh bag. You're going to pour in the water, leaving a couple inches up at the top. You're going to add your molasses and any optional boosters. And then you're going to aerate it with your bubbler for 24 hours. right? And if you don't have a bubbler, you can still do this, but you're going to have to go back and continuously stir it every couple hours. And absolutely whatever happens, do not let it go past, like, you know, 8 to 10 hours without stirring it. So if, you know, waking up, going to bed late and waking up super early so that you can stir your brew is a problem, then, you know, just go get yourself a fucking air pump, dude. They're not expensive. It'll be worth it. Save you some work. So after you do that, when it's done, you're going to use it immediately. Within 4 to 6 hours after the brew finishes, you want to get that out of the bucket, because the microbes die off. They start to die off immediately once the oxygen supply runs out. So, and the whole point of this is generating these microbes. So if they die, you know, you've done all that for nothing. So you're going to use it then as a compost pile activator. You're going to pour over layers as you build your pile up, or you're going to drench the top to reinvigorate a stalled compost pit. You can use it directly in your garden, drench the soil with it, apply to beds before planting to inoculate the root zone, or pour it directly around plants. You can put some on the leaves, and it's going to just, these microorganisms are going to go everywhere and your plants are going to love you. You can also use it as a foliar spray, which we will talk about in depth at some later point, not today. You can filter and spray it directly onto the plant leaves for a microbial shield against pathogens, harmful fungi, harmful bacteria, all the stuff that you don't want. It's kind of like in your gut, you know, you want the good bacteria, and you know, there's a balance of both, but if your good bacteria run out, the bad ones take over, you've got issues. So it's literally, it's even the same microorganisms in your gut that's in the soil in most circumstances. So here's a pro tip. This isn't a fertilizer. It's a starter culture. It won't replace compost, but it'll light a fire under your pile and supercharge the biology in your soil. A final thought, you don't need to buy magic soil sprays. All this crap that they're selling you, you don't need it. You can make them in a bucket with what you've already got. And this is the heartbeat of biological gardening. It's alive, it's adaptive, and it's 100% in your control. So now, let's kick off into the book of the month. Regenerative Soil by Matt Powers. This book is an absolute game changer. If you ever wanted to understand how soil actually works, down to the biological, chemical, and mineral interactions that make or break a living system, Regenerative Soil is the clearest, most practical guide I've found. Matt breaks down complex soil science into language that anyone can grasp, even me, while still going deep enough to expand the mind of even a seasoned grower. This isn't just theory, it's a tool for practical action that anyone can use. You're going to learn about how microbes, minerals, and plants interact to build living fertility, how to test and analyze soil without needing a whole lab, how to restore degraded land using biology instead of synthetics, and tactical methods for composting, inoculating, and regenerating soil in any climate. I've been going through his regenerative soil course alongside the book, and I'm just blown away with how much I've already learned. I can't shut up about it. Every week, I walk into the garden with a better understanding of what's happening under my feet, and that understanding is shaping everything from how I compost to how I plant. So, and if you've been resonating with this dispatch so far, and you like this stuff, and you want to go deeper, this book is your next step. Go to his website. Go pick it up. I'll put a link to his site in the text version of the dispatch. And it's not just a book, guys. It's a blueprint for reclaiming fertility, freedom, and the future from the ground up. So now our final section is the dispatch directory. We're still in the early days of sustainable sedition, but this thing is building momentum fast, and you're part of it. Thank you. Seriously. If you've enjoyed this week's dispatch, here's what you can do next. I want to challenge you. Pick one practice from this issue. Brew a compost activator. Sow a cover crop. Build a plant guild. Do it in a pot if you don't have the space. And just get in motion. Just do something. Don't overthink it. Just start. It's going to be okay. You might mess up. It's fine. Have fun. Learn. This is literally nature. It's science. It's trial and error. It's growth. This is how we evolve. This is how we figure this stuff out, guys. This is how we solve the complex problems that we're facing in this point in history. And if we don't do it, nobody's coming to save us. You know, it's up to us. It's really in our hands. It's to get something tangible within our grasp that we can pass down to our kids. Because, you know, we're not going to solve all these problems overnight. It's going to have to be a gradual change. And this is how we do it. Long, slow solutions that actually last and build a solid foundation. And where else? What is a more solid foundation than the soil itself? You know, honestly. I guess sometimes my tangents on the side actually turn out pretty well. So let's finish this. Next, I want you, if you can, please leave a comment on the post and tell me what you're trying or what you're learning. I read everything that you guys send. I get so excited when somebody sends me something, whether it's feedback, whether it's a fuck you suck, whether it's I really enjoyed the dispatch, whether it's a question that you have for me that you want me to answer in a coming edition of the dispatch, or, you know, in the podcast later on once we really get that going. And please explore the website. I've got a whole library of free tools, resources, experts, books that I are on my like personal reading list that I've read. And I'm slowly but surely building a library of documentaries, like YouTube documentaries, that you can go through and learn about this stuff, the importance, the permaculture aspects, the regenerative agriculture aspects, the freedom, all of it. All in one place. I'm really trying to make this just a hub to connect you guys with the people who can teach you the things that you're most passionate about, while I learn to hopefully be one of those people one day. So go to the website. You're probably already there if you click the link and you're listening to this still. And then lastly, please share this. If you really enjoyed it, if you learned something, share this with someone you know who's ready to take their soil, their health, and their freedom seriously and start living like they matter. Because you know what? What you do matters. It really does. So keep your ears open. Sustainable Sedition Radio is dropping soon. And I know today I was reading from a script a lot of the time that I wrote over this past week. But if you enjoyed it, you know, this is a little bit of a sneak preview of what you can expect from the podcast once that goes live. So keep your eyes out. It's coming. Thank you guys again so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Everything that I'm doing is thanks to you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your time. I'll catch you next week. Keep on building what thrives and changing times.